Can you tell us about your education after you graduated from high school? Where was your further education?
Yes. I went to Syracuse University Architecture School for 3 years, almost 3 years, and then enlisted in the Army. That was 1943. And when I came back with a GI Bill of Rights, well, I went to Syracuse because my father, being a faculty member, didn't have to pay tuition. It was free education for faculty children. And after the war, when the GI Bill of Rights would pay for your tuition and even room and board, and quite generous, I went to Columbia for 2 years.
You received in your college career any awards?
Not really, no.
I see. How did you choose to be an architect? Was someone influential who gave you the impact or suggestion to become an architect?
Yes. There was a professor of history, architectural history, at Syracuse University, and my father invited him over one day, and he was a very fascinating man. He had spent a great deal of time in China, and he got me interested in it, and I believe he took me on a tour of the department. And I think it was that that influenced me. I had considered advertising, art, and I wasn't that good an artist that I could pursue art as a career, but I thought that some related field I could fit in well.
Were you active in any students' organization during your college years?
Was that?
In any student organizations?
Or no. Architecture is really a very demanding field, and in school it's almost an endurance contest. We had 24-hour sketches where we had to work 24 hours. I think there were some that were three-day sketches, and we didn't seem to have time for anything other than our academic work. And I find the same thing is true today at Carnegie Mellon. Students who aren't prepared or sufficiently interested to give it that kind of time drop out. In fact, it's not unusual for half to drop out in the first year. But we really didn't have, I guess I could have found a little time, but it seems we were always there day and night.
Were there many Jewish students when you were in school?
Well, our class was small. I think there were 18 in the freshman class of architecture, and there might have been three of the 18. But generally, I don't think there were that many in the whole department, no.
And how they were treated as Jewish students, or there was there any anti-Semitism in those days in schools?
Not overt that I could determine. The two others in our freshman class were from New York City, and they were a little bit, what should I say, the young man, who's still a friend of mine, was rather outspoken and much more sophisticated than the rest of us, you know. And he made a caused some hard feelings, but
I
can't say that I saw any examples of it. In the Army, I did. I think the only people court-martialed in our company were two Jewish people. And they were only privates, and I don't think they did it. Three of them, now that I think of it. I don't think they did that, anything that terrible, but I think that the officers were sort of looking to hang them with something.
Because they were Jews?
I get that impression, because they were the only people court-martialed.
Now we'll ask you some questions about how you and your wife met.
Oh.
Where did you meet? How did you meet?
As I say, my brother came here first, and he married, I think before I even came here. Yes, he was married when I came. I came in 1950, and his wife, who was also a Pittsburgher, would fix me up with blind dates. And that's how I met my wife. In fact, it's sort of funny, when I just met this person again recently, her daughter married a friend of ours. When I went to her house, somehow I went to the wrong address, and there was a young lady there waiting for a blind date too. And she was about ready to get in the car, and then she said, "What did you say your name was?" I said, "Oh, I'm terribly sorry. I think you have the wrong address here." But I met her in 1950, I think it was, yeah.
Do you remember your first date? Where did you go?
I'm not sure if it was the first. It was one of the first. She was a counselor at a day camp with my sister-in-law. And they had pool privileges on the weekends. And she and a friend, a married couple, and I went to, I think a Mrs. Harrison ran this camp for years in O'Hara Township somewhere. And that's where we went, yes.
So how long did you date your wife?
About a year, yes.
And where did you, if you recall, propose to her?
Yes. You mean, or did she propose to me?
Whichever way it went.
No, I did. Yes.
But do you remember where you were?
Well, I remember my mother had given me a diamond ring for this purpose, and I had left it in the car in a shoebox when I went in to see her, and it was at her house, I believe, yeah.
Okay, can you give us your wife's first name and her maiden name?
Her name is Ann Lois, no E in the Ann, Ann Lois Miller.
I see. Can you tell us about her education or about her career?
She went to Colfax, Alderdice, and Pitt. And has a degree in, what is that called, the younger education, grades say 1 through 4, something like that. And she taught, I think, for perhaps 3 years when we were first married.
Mm-hmm. Where was she educated?
At the University of Pittsburgh.
You said you have two children?
Yes.
I see. Can you give us their names?
Yes. The boy is Jim, and the daughter is Martha.
I see. When you came here to Pittsburgh, what part of the city did you live in?
We rented an apartment, I remember, on Melwood Street for perhaps a year. We rented an apartment in Beechwood Gardens, probably a year. And then I think we lived with Amos's mother for perhaps 6 months, and I bought a carriage house off of Aylesboro at the corner of Negley, and we moved there in 1956.
I see. Can you tell us a little bit about your children?
Yes. My son is somewhat of a perennial student. He went to St. Edmund's School, which is a wonderful elementary school. Then he graduated from Shadyside, and he graduated from Princeton. And he worked, I think, 2 or 3 years for Random House as an editor. Then he went to University of Virginia and studied architecture and graduated. And he's been working for me for about 5 years. And now he is taking an MBA program. He's in an MBA 11-month accelerated program at Pitt. He's in the middle of that now, complete maybe. I think he'll finish in April or somewhere in that May. And Martha went to Whiteman School, and a short time at Alderdice, and then she went to a what they call an alternative high school, which was located downtown, and graduated there. And then she went to Beaver College for her undergraduate work. And she is now a master's student at University of Pittsburgh, the School of Social Work.
Can you tell us when your children were born, their dates?
Let me just think. That's strange. I have to figure backwards. I believe that Jimmy was born in 1954 and Martha in 1957.
I see. Could you tell us a little bit about the family life here in Pittsburgh with your children, their school years, any educational, Jewish education that they went through?
Yes. Both children attended the Road of Sholem Sunday school program. And Jimmy, in fact, was in the first class where they had bar mitzvahs with Rabbi Jacob. And he was very interested in Jewish religion. And in fact, we thought he might want to become a rabbi, but that seemed to pass, that interest. And Martha was confirmed at Road of Sholem. She was in the confirmation class there.
Did they belong to any organizations? Were they active in any groups?
Jimmy belonged to a debating group, and I don't know under whose auspices it was managed, but he enjoyed that. I think it was while he was at Shadyside. Martha isn't a joiner. No, she didn't belong to, that I can recall, any groups of that sort.
Mm-hmm. What did your children do for fun when they were young?
I'm trying to think if they... I think Jimmy only went once to an overnight camp, and again it was a YMCA camp in Wheeling. And I think Martha went to day camp, but never stay over camp. I think they had a rather normal childhood playing with neighborhood children. Again, we were fortunate. Right adjoining where we lived, there were families with children. In fact, one family had 14 children in a small house. And they played with neighborhood children. In fact, Jimmy is still very close to several of the friends he made at Shadyside. He still sees them. They're both Jewish boys, and he still sees them frequently, although they don't live in Pittsburgh.
See, can you tell us a little bit of any family customs or tradition that you have in your family?
Yes. We had seders at our house, and when my wife was growing up, they had a again during the Depression. Her mother had a tough struggle because the husband had been hospitalized from the time of World War I. So she grew up, you might say, without a father, and the mother had people that roomed and others that even boarded at the house. So one of those people, Sam Gold, was a lifelong friend. I think he moved in when she was 3, and he just passed away this October, but we always had him for the holidays. We called it the holidays, including his birthday, and that was sort of a tradition. And the children almost, I think they called him Uncle Sammy, so that he was a close family friend. And before, we were very friendly with the Horns. Do you know them, Isidore Horn? He was a victim of the Holocaust, and he came here, I think around perhaps 1948, I'm not sure, but we were quite friendly, and they did practice all of the Jewish rituals and customs, and they would have us frequently for seders and other celebrations at their house.
Mm-hmm. They were more traditional, more observant?
They were, of course, their upbringing was Orthodox, as was my father's, actually. But and I still think they belonged to St. Margareta Shul. Yes, they were Orthodox.
I see. Well, now we will go to, and we'll ask you some questions about your professional life and career, if you can tell us a little bit more.
As I said, I came to Pittsburgh in, I think it was 1948, to remodel the law offices downtown. And I believe it was 1950 to remodel Little's shoe store. And I did a little shoe store with two classmates from Columbia. We actually did the work in New York. And then I came here to supervise it, and I just stayed. And I did work for, I believe, two architectural firms here. I never worked in an office more than 6 or 7 months, unlike some people who spend years in one place. I worked one summer here for Murray Levine, I think that was in 1939, before I even went to architecture school. And I worked in an office in Syracuse and one in New York. And here I worked for Brandon Smith, who is a very prominent classical architect. And I also worked for Liff and Just. I think that was my last job.
So you have
and what happened was, right after the war, there was such a demand for building and for renovating and improving, because there had been a, first of all, the Depression, when nothing was done, and then the war years, so there was a almost a pressure, you see, to do work. And I did a motel for Bob Conley, and then I got another motel to do for a man that saw that. And all the time I was working for Brandon Smith and Liff and Just, I was doing work on the side. And it became a case where I didn't have a choice. I couldn't keep up with both. So I opened an office in 1953. In fact, I'm still there, the same place on Forbes Street. And I think one of our first jobs was a renovation of a storeroom for the Tweed Shop. And it was quite different from what had been done in store planning or store design up to that point. It's not my opinion, I was told that by different people. And it was also done, as I recall, the whole thing, signs, everything, for $4,500. So it was done more with imagination and very inexpensive materials. And from that, and probably being on Forbes Street, right where all the stores were, I got a whole group of one after another stores to do. And at that time, stores in small communities like Wheeling and Morgantown and all the little towns, we used to go to Clarksburg, we were remodeling stores for both the founders of the business and also their sons who were joining them after the war. And I would hire young people from Carnegie Mellon to work on Saturdays, and we would have perhaps 5 people working on different things. It was very exciting, very enjoyable. So that it wasn't really a struggle to get work in those days. And it was all word of mouth. In 1956, I started doing work for what was then a very active small department store chain, Jason's. And we would do them in malls, and the malls were just coming in too. We would do stores in malls, as well as other workhouses. It was a very exciting time, unlike today when unfortunate, most of these companies are bankrupt, or went bankrupt. There's no longer a Jason's, there's no longer a Azen's. I did work for Azen's. And second generation doesn't want to be in retail, and it's too demanding, and it's too difficult today. So that kind of work almost disappeared. But we do an occasional store. We do restaurants. To replace the stores, we got a movie theater client who's kept us very busy. I may have done for as many as 80 screens for him. And these are the multiple screen theaters. So we sort of learned that from the ground up, and I wouldn't say we're specialists, but we seem to get a lot of those to do. It's changed a great deal. There are no lots in Squirrelville, so whereas we once did a lot of, not a lot, but a fair number of houses. I did the one on the corner of Aylesboro and Negley. At the time, I remodeled the carriage house. In fact, I bought the carriage house from the owner. And we also did houses in Wheeling and Little Washington, and for Dr. Pistacchi for one. But of course, this year is difficult. This year and last year,
how is
people
it?
Are very cautious. They're not remodeling. And the merchants, I think, generally are in trouble, especially the small store owner. They can't even think about investing in improvements.
How do you see the changes on Murray Avenue over the years?
I remember when I came here as a child on these vacations, going with my grandmother to Murray Avenue when she would shop. And there, I don't know how many stores there were that had open crates of chickens and that sort of thing on the sidewalk, kosher butcher shops.
What year are we talking about here?
Well, that was probably 37, 38. It was a bustling place. I haven't seen chickens in those open cages for years. When I first came here, my uncle founded a little shoe store. And I think that was 1936. It was a former post office, and then it was an indoor golf course. And it, as well as many of the storerooms on that block of Forbes Street, were vacant. And there was an empty, there were automobile dealers in Squirrelville, perhaps three or four. There's not one anymore. There were more theaters. Well, one more, the Beacon, I think. There was vacant land on Forbes Street in that block between Adele's and Little's. Cayman Chevrolet had a used car lot, I recall, next to Rosen's drugstore. So the whole, I can't say whether that's an improvement or not. The character has changed, particularly Murray Avenue, not so much on Forbes Street.
In what way do you see the change?
What was?
In what way, how do you see the change?
How do I see it?
Yes.
Well, I think Ford Street will always have business because it's a junction for going to Wilkinsburg and other for the public transportation. I think that the rents have gone up to the extent where it's very difficult for a merchant to make a profit anymore. In fact, when I first rented the office in 1953, I recall looking out the window in Adele's store, which is still there, catered to really the carriage trade. There were chauffeur-driven cars actually lined up, several of them at the curb, and the chauffeurs would wait outside while the matrons would go in there and shop. I think that's disappeared everywhere, though.